Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Hollywood Podcast, covering the latest in film, TV, streaming, and social media. I'm your host, Max Geschwind. Stay tuned for today's episode.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. I'm so excited to be joined by editor and co-producer Sean Albertson, who's out with his latest film, Imaginary, produced by Jason Blum of Blumhouse and directed by Jeff Wadlow. Imaginary is about a woman who returns to her childhood home only to discover that the imaginary friend teddy bear, Chauncey, that she left behind is very real and unhappy that she abandoned him. Sean's past credits include Fantasy Island, Truth or Dare, The Vampire Diaries, The Expendables 3, Rocky Balboa, and Rambo, just to name a few. Sean, thanks for joining me today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I'd love to start off by talking about your work in collaboration with the director, Jeff. I know that you had been working with him for several years now, most recently on Fantasy Island and Truth or Dare, a couple of projects I highlighted earlier.
Right.
How was your relationship with him? How has it evolved over time? And did working with him previously on those past projects, did that create an easier and more seamless working relationship coming on to Imaginary?
Yeah, for sure. So Jeff hired me to edit a Netflix movie called True Memoirs of an International Assassin, an action comedy starring Kevin James years ago. And it was a great experience, clearly for both of us, because he keeps asking me to come back and work with him again. And, you know, for me, the early jobs, you know, the first time I work with a director, there's you know, it's the dating process, right? Like, you're getting to know each other. I'm going to try to show you all my best parts up front and not rock the boat too much. I have to feel out my director and producers, anybody who's in the room. I got to read the room. I've got to get a sense of, like, how far can I push my, you know, my ideas, my thoughts, my creative input. I generally, even in that process at this point in my career, I don't really hold back. My feeling is, I'm going to give you everything I got creatively, professionally, but you know, you're the final say. And so, of course, if you're not digging it, so you know, and it worked well, I think, for both of us on that project. And then he called me, having gotten his first Blumhouse movie called Truth or Dare, and said, "I really want you to do it. Blumhouse does not want you to do it, and they won't pay your rate." And it was a very low budget movie. And because I had such a great experience with Jeff, really just enjoyed the creative process and enjoy him as a person, as a human being. I consider him a friend now. But it was a really open creative process. And so I said, of course I'll do it, whatever the fuck they're paying. And I did it. And to answer kind of the second part of your question is, yes, over the, you know, we've, this is our Imaginary, I think, is our sixth project together. And through, you know, we're, he's my work wife, you know, like we're a couple. And it's a very intimate process, and we know each other very well now. Spending so much time in a room, arguing about things, issues, talking about life stuff, because all of that is important to the creative process and what we bring to a project. And so, you know, and I think it's sort of how I've become a co-producer, particularly on the Jeff Wadlow movies, is we have a great creative trust in each other, and I do bring everything, every thought, every idea, and I start, you know, from the script stage, from the early script stage, and so it makes it easier. It can make it combative, which I think is sometimes an important part of the creative process. We will argue about things. But it is all, you know, it's all in good nature. And he knows that I know that he does get the final say in the room. And so it's why I'm comfortable arguing for what I really believe in. So, you know, I can't speak highly enough of my creative partnership with Wadlow.
I wanted to start off by talking about Sean, the producer of Imaginary, because as you mentioned, you were involved in the very early script stage of the project. And Chauncey acts as this portal between the innocence of childhood imagination to a more sinister and supernatural world. Can you talk about, since you were involved heavily on those early script conversations, what influences or perhaps personal experiences that you or Jeff were able to put into the story?
My involvement at that point is like I'm editing, where I will read the script and I will give copious script notes. So, you know, I can't say I was involved in the development of specifically what you're talking about. What I will do at that point in the process is say, like, you know, I'm not buying this moment. This isn't reading as scary. Here's what I suggest. I remember specifically, I had an issue with the cold open of the movie. It was, which was originally played in the script in the house that our protagonist or one of our protagonists grew up in. And then of course she decides to move her new family into that house. It's a nightmare. And I'm like, well, you know, there's a horror film trope we want to try to avoid if we can. Like, you know, let's not have the audience right up front be like, why the fuck would she move into that house? She just had a nightmare about it. Clearly something terrible happened there. And so things like that, you know, character arc, if I find that that the progression of the story is not working, and very often I'll see things that, just from my own experience doing this for so many years, I know are going to be problems later, issues of clarity, of information, of you know, confusion that always end up coming up in test screenings, say. You know, another thing in this case was that there's an entity in the movie that was kind of a last minute addition to the script. I didn't like it. I didn't think it was going to work. I made my argument. I told Jeff and the writers why I didn't think it would work. And I think that, I assume this may have been his Jeff's idea all along, or maybe it was through those conversations. I don't know, but he smartly decided to, anytime he was shooting a scene with the entity in it, that the entity was written in it, he shot a version without it. And so we had the opportunity to work with degrees of the entity. And thank goodness for that, because, you know, we ended up with a great balance where our audiences, you know, finally said, like, we love the, you know, it's great. It's like perfect. And that we sort of notice it and we're not sure what it is. And so, so yeah, so that's sort of my job at that point from the script stage.
And I think it's so interesting that, and you know, it's not every editor that's also a producer on the projects that they work on.
True.
And for you to be involved in the early script stage and provide notes, knowing in the back of your mind that you were going to be working on this later on in post after filming's wrapped, do you have that in the back of your head as you're providing notes to Jeff on how to best guide your own work? Because you're in a sense, I guess, shaping the work that you will get later on in post when you have to edit the film.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, the bottom line is, like, I believe that a great editor, you know, fuck that. Like, I'll only speak for me. I don't really know how most other editors work and how they do their process. I like to learn how other editors do their processes and listen to podcasts with other editors. And But for me anyway, for me to be the best editor I can be, I believe that I have to be, that I am a writer, I am a director, a redirector often. I'm part sort of redirector of photography, so kind of a camera operator at times. And so for me, it's like, you know, I should be a part of every early stage of the ideas, because it is going to be in my hands ultimately with the director, and to make the best possible version of this thing. And so, you know, they say that, you know, a film is written three times, in the script, in the shooting, and then in the edit. And that is so true for me. But sure, like, I would like to sort of work out all the, work out most of the kinks on the page, because as much as I can rewrite, and I do rewrite in the edit, and redirect and create maybe a thought or a moment or a performance that wasn't quite, you know, that wasn't there, or that wasn't on the page, or that wasn't even intended by a performer. I love all of that about what I do, but preparation is the key, I think, to, you know, any great filmmaking experience. And so, so for me, it is really important to be a part of these things as early as possible. Jeff also brings me in on the other creative inputs, like, creature creation. You know, he's got, you know, I'm getting emails about, okay, you know, here are some looks, storyboarding, production design, you name it. Like, I, you know, he involves me in that. And I don't come in as a, like, full blown producer, where I come into these meetings and I'm like, no, I think it should be this. But he brings me in for two reasons, I think. One is because it's a collaborative art, because we've been such great partners over the years. And if I have an issue, or if I have a thought, I'm going to bring it to him, not to the production designer, not to the artist who's, you know, doing the creature design. I'm just going to give him my opinions. And if he chooses to take those opinions, great. If not, great. And then the other reason is that it's really great for me to, before I start the process of putting the movie together into a whole, to get a sense of where he's at, to be able to listen to what he's saying to his designers and to all the other artists on the movie, you know, about tone and look and feel and you know, obviously I participate in the table reads, and I'm really, like, as much information as I can get from him. It sits in the back of my head as I'm putting this movie together, which is helpful. And sometimes I have to throw all that out if something is not working for me the way it's written on the page, or the way I believe Jeff wanted it when he shot it. And then I have some other idea of how this might work better. And I may try that before I even show it to him the first time. But for me, it's really important to have the filmmaker's goals in mind.
Yeah. This is the first time, I believe, that you're editing an inanimate character in your history of editing for film and TV, but definitely not the first editor to have confronted this challenge before. We've seen it
right
on a whole host of films, especially in the horror space, like Imaginary. Yeah. Did you learn or study anything from past editors' work or in past films on how to go about editing something that doesn't evoke much emotion, as is the case in Chauncey?
Yeah, I think I probably it was the Annabelle movies that I probably spent most time looking at. You know, I would say I studied editing of inanimate objects less so than just sort of the particular genre of, you know, One of the reasons I said I feel like this is one of Jeff's best films is at Blumhouse, they have a term that they call Wadlovian, which, because Jeff is a very sort of energetic, funny director. His pacing, as far as the way he shoots, is very geared toward like action and comedy, and even in all, you know, in the other two sort of horror, you know, they were thrillers, not horrors, but horror movies we did for Blumhouse, you know, very energetic, and so one of the things I love about what we did on this movie is we kind of he pulled away from what Blumhouse called Wadlovian and went towards sort of like, you know, an early James Wan kind of creepy, you know, some really nice creepy slow pans and big creepy wide shots, and so, you know, for me, I really was more studying those kinds of films and entities and you know, as far as like editing Chauncey as an inanimate object, it that felt a little more like innate in my head, like it's a feeling just like sort of editing a human. And the bottom line is I spend so much of my time in my career stealing a shot of an actor to cut to as a reaction shot that wasn't intended to be a reaction shot for this particular moment, thereby creating an emotion for the audience that maybe didn't exist in that character's performance. And so I just did the same thing with Chauncey, right? Like, anytime we wanted the audience to invoke a human emotion from Chauncey, it's a matter of like when you cut to him, why you're cutting to him in that moment, and which shot you're using of him, and what is, you know, what could his face look like? What human emotion could you grab from the look on his inanimate face from what just happened before we cut to him?
Right. A lot relies on the reaction shots in order to help the viewer understand how to feel in those moments.
I mean, what you just said is so true of what we do. And you know, the fact I have this wonderful sort of side career as a fix-it guy, right? You know, 9 times out of 10, when somebody calls me in and says, "Hey, we're concerned about this movie, can you help?" It's because there was some disconnection or somebody didn't understand that in order for an audience to care about anything that happens, and I recut a lot of action movies, even action. You can have great action. It's just cut, 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 action, 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 hit, hit, hit. But if you're not telling the audience why each hit matters, right? Like, why does it matter to us that this guy just got hit in the face? Well, this is something I really gained from my experience, like working with a guy like Stallone, is that what matters is the reaction. Is showing the audience the pain and the anguish of not only the character who's being hit, right, but the reactions of the people who love that character in another space, and the same, you know, not to veer away from imaginary, but the same goes for this, and for even cutting to an inanimate object is you know, we are manipulating the audience and telling them why, you know, when they should feel something and why they should feel something. And often the only way to do that is to cut to the face of somebody who's reacting or not reacting.
Yeah. One last question for you. And I don't want to give anything away because the film just came out this weekend and it's, mm-hmm. you know, doing great. So congratulations on the opening.
Thank you.
But the door is left a crack open at the end of the film. Have there been any conversations post, finishing the film about a sequel between you and Jeff.
Yes.
Okay. So where are we at? And is Blumhouse receptive to those conversations?
I mean, listen, I don't want to speak out of school. And here's the way that Jeff, I really appreciate this about Jeff, because we've both worked on plenty of movies that were like, where you like go into making a movie and you're like, oh, and all here, all the sequels are going to be great. We're going to like, it's such bullshit, because like the fact of the matter is that, it all depends on performance and appetite. And so with Jeff's help, I never go into these things like hoping for or thinking like, sequel. Obviously, to me anyway, I think it's an amazing vehicle for sequels. It's definitely something that, that Blumhouse is known for. I think Chauncey is a wonderful character. But that's really all I'll say about it, in that, like, yes, we've talked about thoughts and ideas for what a sequel could be. I certainly know that Blumhouse is receptive to the idea of a sequel. What, when, why, and if, I can't tell you.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's a really good omen the fact that Blumhouse produces these original ideas like Imaginary that they later spawn off into these franchise juggernauts that we've seen
Yeah.
routinely over the last several years. So hopefully that doesn't stop with Imaginary and that we can see a continuation of the story soon. Well, congratulations again on the opening. Hopefully
Thank you.
it has long legs in the coming weeks so we can see more of a this story. But I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate you too.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Please take a moment to subscribe to the Hollywood Podcast for free on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Until next time, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Max Geschwind. Thanks for listening.